Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
FedEx Forum, Growl Towels, Super Grizz, each one a Memphis Grizzlies tradition. This is the Grizzlies Podcast.
What's up, everybody? We are back for another week of the Memphis Grizzlies Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Barnes. We are joined by DeMichael Cole, your Grizzlies beat writer. And once again, it's been another good week for the Grizzlies in the NBA world as we record this. They are sitting pretty at second place in the Western Conference, two games ahead of the newly playoff-bound Sacramento Kings for the first time since 06. The Kings are officially in the playoffs. My pick for the best story of the year, but we'll get into that later. But the Grizzlies, with six games left, have a two-game lead for the number two seed. They play the Clippers on Friday. They just finished playing the Clippers on Wednesday. A tough loss at home, ending their, is it 12-game win streak, DeMichael?
Yeah, it was a 12-game win streak.
12-game home win streak.
Yeah, 12-game home win streak. Too shy of the franchise record set, I believe it was 2012-2013.
Yeah, so obviously no Jaren, no Desmond Bane, no Tyus Jones. It was kind of a rest day for some guys on a back-to-back, and the Clippers took advantage.
Yeah.
Big nights for Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, but too many three-pointers.
Let me clarify.
Go ahead.
14 is the single-season franchise record. 22, I believe, is the number overall. For clarification purposes there. So they were close. They were closing in on the single-season franchise record, but a long way from the overall record. But
yeah, 22. Wow, that is – do you remember what year that was?
Yeah, it was the same season. So I think 2012-2013, they closed the season by winning 14 in a row, and then they started the 13-14 season. That was the 55-win team, and they won the first eight before losing to the San Antonio Spurs. Yep.
That is crazy. Yeah, just down here in the media guy. Wow, that is incredible. So even if the Grizzlies kept it rolling, they'd have a lot more work to do to catch that streak. So an amazing run nonetheless at home. Obviously, the Grizzlies game, it was a while. Like, I had to remember what it was like to watch a losing game at FedEx Forum because I'm so used to, you know, the streamers coming down and whoever gets the final interview and all that stuff. So it was an interesting scene. But DeMichael, I guess let's start off with this. Since the Grizzlies are pretty much, you know, we know their playoff fate, they're a top three seed at this point. Let's dive into who I call the new fan favorite, if you will, Luke Kennard, the man with many different nicknames I've seen on Twitter. You can find those. We're not going to get into some of them. But Luke Kennard has just been – he was a pickup that, you know, was said at the time – there was a chance that you thought this would be a sneaky good pick because it fit a need the Grizzlies had. They needed shooting badly besides Desmond Bane. And sure enough, Luke Kennard has been just that. I mean, I'm just going to run these numbers before we dive into him. Kennard in 20 games is shooting 54%, 54.4% on three-pointers on 5.2 attempts. He has made, and I want to get this right because this is kind of crazy here, he has made 56 three-pointers in 20 games compared to the 59 he made in 35 games with the Clippers. Again, 15 fewer games, three fewer threes, which is incredible. He's on that great pace. And he just came off a game where he made a franchise record 10 three-pointers, a career high, obviously, for him, franchise record breaking Jaren and Mike Miller's record, I believe, with 9. DeMichael, you've written extensively about Luke Kennard. Share with us, if you will. One, do you think this trade has worked out so far better than imagined? And two, how exciting is it to see what this team can do now with Kennard and Bane locked and loaded for this playoff push?
Yeah, so first, let's start with the narrative, and then we'll get into like the X's and O's of this. The narrative is, remember when the Grizzlies made this trade? Fan base was, I mean, not the fan base just with the Grizzlies, but you got to think, put it in perspective. There was a team that went and acquired Kevin Durant. There was another team that went and acquired Kyrie Irving. And then there was all this talk about OG Anunoby, who's probably going to make an all-defensive team this season while shooting, you know, efficient from the three-point line. So those three names, you know, were the big, big names, you know, especially Kevin Durant and OG Anunoby. But the Grizzlies end up getting Luke Kennard, a guy who's barely in the rotation, you know, with the Clippers. And it goes to show, because the team that acquired Kyrie Irving, Dallas Mavericks, currently outside of the play-in, not even projected to make the play-in, let alone the playoffs. The team that acquired Kevin Durant, while they're 4-0 while he's in the lineup, but he hasn't been in the lineup. And because they traded for Kevin Durant, they lost a lot of depth, the Suns, that is. And when they lost all that depth, when Kevin Durant went down, they struggled. And now they're barely holding on to the four seed when, Evan, I believe 2-3 weeks ago, we were having the conversation about that possibly being a team that could creep up there with the Suns and with the Kings and the Grizzlies for that 2-3 conversation. But now that's not the case. So with all that being said, it just goes to show that you don't always have to go after the name. Just go after the game. You know, and what the Grizzlies needed was, as Zach Kleiman, the GM, kept saying, they needed three-point shooting. They wanted to add a shooter, and they got Luke Kennard, and the results have been as good as you could hope for. For one, the volume is there. I think that's the most important thing. He is shooting the three-pointer. You see teams are trying to run him off the line and all those type of things, but the Grizzlies are doing a great job. They're setting screens for him to give him just, you know, 3 or 4 inches of space, of transition looks, everything. The game he shot 10 of 11 that you referenced earlier, Evan, in the game that he shot 10 of 11 from three-pointers, Ja Morant told us after the game that he was like, oh, he shot 10 of 11? Well, we want him to shoot 20. And he wasn't joking. He was serious. That this team wants Luke Kennard shooting the basketball as much as possible. The results have been great. Then when you put him and Desmond Bane on the floor together, I mean, it's a whole new level. I think Cleaning the Glass has these guys like in a 99 percentile when it comes to two-man lineups, when you have Luke Kennard and Desmond Bane in the same lineup. And then if you do it to three, where we've seen a lot of, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. with those guys, still very efficient lineup. And just imagine now the options that the Grizzlies are going to have with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., both putting immense amount of pressure on the paint, combined with the fact that you have guys like Luke Kennard and Desmond Bane that you simply can't leave open. So it makes it tough on defenses. And the Grizzlies now, over the last, I think, couple weeks, they've been the highest rated offense in that time.
Yeah, and I'm just going to throw out the numbers from Cleaning the Glass here because you mentioned it. And shout out to Dan Devine. I believe Dan Devine with the Ringer. Yeah, Dan Devine with the Ringer, who pointed this out first. These are the numbers for the Grizzlies with Luke Kennard and Desmond Bane on the floor. With those two on, they're averaging 128 points per possession, which is, again, the 99th percentile, which is incredible. They're outscoring teams by 14.5 points per 100 possessions, which is ridiculous. And they're not turning the ball over either. They're taking care of the ball, and they're just lighting it up. I think that tells you right there, you have two dudes who are raising the floor of this team. Because there was one thing to have Desmond Bane. And I remember when Bane came, there was a lot of curiosity about how well a shooter he could be. And the last 2 years has shown he has been absolutely phenomenal. And this year he's been phenomenal. But now you add a second shooter in Luke Kennard. I said it on Twitter, and I'll say it here. When a shooter is that hot and they pull up from three, you just yell layup. I did it. You know, you could do that with Kevin Durant when he pulls up. When he pulls up, you yell layup.
Easy, easy money.
Luke Kennard is getting to that point where if he pulls up from three, you yell layup and count three. Like, it is scary how efficient he is so far. And I should point out, Desmond Bane is still averaging 40.8%. from three. Obviously, he is playing with that foot injury. His 3-point numbers are down, but that dude is still shooting 40% from three and still putting up a career high 21 points per game. Just point it out there. But Kennard, it's funny to see how the fans have been so quick to embrace him. And I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, we can get into a lot of reasons why, but the guy can just pull it and shoot it. And I think what makes it intriguing for me is how well will he do that in the postseason when teams are keying on him? Like, he won't be the number one option to stop, of course, but teams have found ways to neutralize specialists in the playoffs in some way. So I'm curious, can they keep it up? Because when you space the floor with those two dudes, Bane and Kennard, the offense is just incredible. But
yeah, but the thing is, that's also the benefit that you have, you know, with a guy like Kennard. So you mentioned, you know, how teams can neutralize his three-point shooting, right? Well, what teams have to do in order to neutralize a shooter like that is you have to overplay, you have to go over on the screens. And we saw, actually, I thought, last couple games, there have been glimpses of teams doing really well at that. The Orlando Magic game, right? Luke Kennard comes out 4-4, three-pointers in the first half. I think he finished the game 4-5. And so only one attempt in the second half, as, you know, the Magic just got real aggressive in terms of how they were overplaying him on that end. But what it created was when you play him that way, he's able to get to the basket. He's able to get to that little mid-range area where he's, you know, pretty efficient from as well, if he can get a shot off there. So you kind of put him in different situations. And I was interested to see how the Clippers guard him, because the Clippers know him, you know, better than the Grizzlies probably at this point. Clippers game, 5 of 9 from the field, 1 of 3 on three-pointers. So, again, Clippers did a great job in that first game running him off the three-point line to the point where he took more twos than threes, which just hasn't been the case in his Memphis tenure so far. But at the end of the day, 1 of 3 from three-point line, but still shot 5 of 9 from the field. So I think what we need to see, I guess, more of from Luke Kennard. I haven't seen, you know, his finishing standout. I don't think that's the area he's going to be great at, but it's getting to that mid-range area. It's playmaking for other teammates, because when teams overplay you at the three-point line, you're going to have, you know, offensive advantages in terms of the numbers when you're driving to the basket and things like that. So that's kind of the next step in that evolution process, because you're right. Teams aren't just going to let Luke Kennard stand out there just like they haven't let Desmond Bane do it. And we've seen Desmond Bane kind of evolve. You know, you hear the nickname Downhill Des. He's kind of become, you know, more efficient when it comes to going to the basket and just being aggressive in that way.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm wondering is, was yesterday's game a foreshadowing of what he's going to have to do if teams run him off the line? Because I think if he can become someone who doesn't turn down two-point shots, because I felt like early on, he definitely was turning down two-point shots. He could put the ball on the floor a little bit, but he turned down a lot of two-pointers. And I'm like, in the playoffs, you can't do that. And I think teams in general can't do that. It's not just a Luke problem. That's an NBA problem, because guys are so used to driving and kicking that you got to take the shots when they're there, because the postseason is about maximizing possessions, not just maximizing points. So I would like to see what he does in terms of adding that versatility, because teams are going to find a way to get him off the line. He's going to hit threes, but he may not have a game where he can get you like 6 threes and average 6 threes a game. Like, I think about, like, to me, one of the most impressive shooting displays I saw in the postseason. 2001 Western Conference Finals. It was the Lakers and the Spurs. The Spurs were the number one seed that year, and the Lakers stomped them out. But the one thing about that series I still remember to this day, I can't tell you what Kobe did or what Shaq did. I can tell you that Derek Fisher made like 20 threes, I believe, in that four-game series, because Derek Fisher was just that red hot. And that's something that you remember, because that kind of player can give you that impact. It's curtains. So if Kennard can have that kind of impact, I don't think Bane will, because I think Bane will have a different impact where he's going to be able to get you 20 in a series. But if Kennard can have that kind of impact, you will appreciate that, because teams are going to do whatever they can. And if somebody catches fire, it could be curtains. So I will be real curious how this plays out in the postseason. But right now, aren't you just loving this though, Michael? Because I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it.
Man, it's kind of different, right? You see the Grizzlies, we think of all this grit, grind. Even last year, there was the flash that this team brought. But at the ease that they're scoring with right now is just different. At the end of the day, it's very simple. They're the best paint scoring team in the NBA, have been for 4 consecutive seasons now. They led the NBA in paint scoring, Ja's rookie year, Ja's second year, Ja's third year, and they're currently pacing the NBA by over 3 points, you know, in paint scoring. So they're going to lead the NBA for a fourth season. So with that being said, teams around the league know how dominant the Grizzlies are in the paint. But now you already got one elite shooter, And it's not hard to scout against that. Yeah, don't let Desmond Bain get open. The other guys, yeah, if they make it, then so be it. But now you got two guys you got to account for. And sometimes those two guys are in the lineup at the same time. And it's really changing some things around here.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And it's going to be interesting to see how, again, how that translates. I think people have said, observers have said, the Grizzlies are very good in the regular season. I think even Giannotto has said it before. The Grizzlies have figured out a great regular season formula. Now it's time to translate into the postseason. And that will be our segue into where things stand right now as we prepare for the final stretch here. Wow, the season's going to end next weekend. That's crazy. As we said, the Grizzlies have six games left. So if you look at the West right now, Denver's probably going to get that number one seed. I don't think the Grizzlies are going to catch them. The Kings, as we said, are locked into a top three seed after getting to the playoffs last night. It's right now, the Grizzlies probably have the inside track to that two seed. But again, if they tie the Kings, that will be a problem because the Kings have the tiebreaker advantage due to fewer conference losses. Now, let's look into something that I like to call look ahead and guess. So, DeMichael, as we stand right now, the Grizzlies, guess what team they would face that's the number seven seed as of right now?
None other than the team they faced last season, right?
Yeah, they faced two of the, they faced two teams last postseason. But let the people know which one is currently at number seven.
The first round matchup from last season, the Minnesota Timberwolves. And Evan, let me say this. I think, you know, watching this Timberwolves team lately, you know, early in the season, they kind of were a laughing stock, right? Why they make this move for Gobert? It doesn't make any sense. Yes. Anthony Edwards is complaining about the spacing. Carl Anthony Towns is injured. You know, it's like, man, they swung for it and missed badly. But you look at the way this team's playing lately, it'd be fun if that was the matchup.
I would be intrigued by that. Round two quietly was as fun and entertaining as a series, along with the Golden State Warriors last year. That would be a fun one. And honestly, you know, if you look around that 6-10, let's just say, let's go 5-11, because really the Clippers are currently in fifth right now, and four games behind them in 11th place are the Dallas Mavericks, with the Jazz a half game behind them. So 4.5 games separate eight teams, and that's probably going to be a shuffle from here up until April 9th when the season ends. So really, I don't think we're going to know who the Grizzlies could possibly play. And obviously the play-in tournament will decide that, but we don't even know who's going to probably be in that play-in tournament. So DeMichael, what I want to do is this. Who would you like to see if you could look ahead on, let's say, April 15th, FedEx Forum, who would you like to see as the Grizzlies' first round opponent and why?
Oh man, it's endless options, right? Like just summing up the Western Conference race right now. You got the Warriors at 6, Timberwolves at 7, Lakers at 8, Pelicans 9, a Thunder 10, Mavs 11, Jazz 12. All those teams are in that conversation. Now, let's start with the Lakers for me. I think the Lakers are a team.
Oh, and DeMichael, let's be clear. You're picking your favorites. If you want to dive into most of them, don't cheat. You got to pick one, then you can dive into it. So who do you want the Grizzlies to see in the first round? That would be a fun matchup.
Oh, well, we're going just one team here. I'm gonna go with the Pelicans. That's the matchup I would love to see. Obviously, with a healthy Zion factoring into the conversation there. We've talked about it a few times, how I think the Pelicans and the Grizzlies are going to be around for a while. You know, the Pelicans have that veteran presence with C.J. McCollum, but they also have the Brandon Ingram talent. You know, Zion Williamson, Jonas Valanciunas, and then they have a nice young nucleus. You know, Trey Murphy, Najee Marshall, Herb Jones, all those guys. I think that would be a fun matchup. Watch those teams go at it. Two young teams, two talented squads. They got a taste of the postseason last year. And I think, like I said, if Zion gets healthy, you know, it's a very under-talked about point about what, you know, the Pelicans were doing earlier this season when Zion was healthy. This was a top three seed in the Western Conference once upon a time. And he's played, I believe, less than 30 games this year. So you get Zion Williamson back to that group. We're talking about a real fun matchup.
Ooh, that is a good one. I like that. That also, again, you know, top two teams in the 2019, top two picks in the 2019 draft.
Yeah. Yeah, two teams that are South Carolina kids.
Yeah, two teams that are close, you know, close distance wise. Two teams with young cores that people thought would be fun. I like that. I'm going to go a little bit different. I'm going to pick somebody. I'm going to pick another young core that might be, that would, like, maybe they won't be the matchup, but I kind of want to see this. The Oklahoma City Thunder. And not because I think, not because I think the Grizzlies would have trouble in that matchup. I think the Grizzlies would win that matchup. But I think that would be a fun series because you're talking about Ja and Shai. That would be awesome, and especially that would give Shai a lot of exposure. But I think the Grizzlies would have fun with that matchup. You got two teams that I think stylistically are teams that are young cores, but have done it differently, where the Grizzlies have gotten their success a lot faster, while Oklahoma City, we thought, would be struggling again after Chet Holmgren got hurt. They've now climbed into that, you know, play-in game where they could be ahead of schedule a little bit. I like that idea because you see two teams that basically were on similar trajectories and the Grizzlies shot ahead of them. Now, it would also be fun because, to Michael, refresh my memory, haven't the Grizzlies played the Thunder in the playoffs before?
Yeah. Yeah. That was the year that the Grizzlies went to the Western Conference Finals. But this was also the year that Russell Westbrook got hurt, Patrick Beverley, in that whole, you know, situation there in the playoffs. So the Grizzlies basically just loaded up on Kevin Durant and just gave him the blues and won that second round series. So, yeah, they played before. It was a fun series.
Yeah. Now, granted, that was almost eons ago. That was the grit and grind team. They met in 2011. They met in 2013, as DeMichael mentioned. That series, they won in the semifinals. And then they last played them in 2014. So there is some history postseason-wise. Not recent, but there is some history. But I think it would be fun because, again, you have two teams that stylistically, similar to the Pelicans, young core, great, you know, superstar in rising, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I think it would be interesting for the Grizzlies to kind of make sure that shows, hey, we're not one of these young teams that's struggling. It would show kind of how they've really accelerated, where they're ahead of these young teams and put themselves in a way where, hey, now these young teams are looking at them to try to, you know, come up and get put on. But I think that would be a sneaky fun series, even if I think the Grizzlies would probably dominate the heck out of that series. And DeMichael, we'd be
remiss. Shai Gilgeous versus Ja. I mean, man.
We're all getting ahead of ourselves. A 2-3 matchup with the Grizzlies Kings, Ja versus Fox, De'Aaron Fox, would be wild. But Ja and Shai in the first round, and Shai, we know, is going to probably want to have something for Ja in that series because he's trying to put himself on. And Shai might be.
And Evan, I've been seeing some people think he's better than Ja. You see the comments out there, and it'll be a two-way street, I think. I think Ja probably hears some of that stuff. So, okay, let me show you.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. And I'm sure that would be fun. There would be some intensity there where you would get people to feel some kind of way. And plus, Shai obviously is having a great season, all-star this year, who could very well challenge for the All-NBA team like Ja. Maybe the most improved player of the year, although we'll see. But he's putting up numbers that are insane. That would be fun. But as I was going to say, there is one series, obviously, that would be the one that everybody, including the country and the NBA offices, are probably salivate over. The Warriors. I think everyone would love to see Golden State and the Grizzlies in the first round of a playoff series, even if we think it'd be better off later. But right now, as it stands, the Warriors could be in that play-in tournament. And if that happens,
oh boy.
Yeah, that would be I would just say get your sleep now because it's going to be incredible. But that would be like the dream, like perfect case scenario for everybody. Grizzlies, Warriors, first round, a rematch, revenge, all that. That would be fun. I think so.
It'd be very fun. That would be that would be the one. The Warriors definitely kind of, you know, they just got Gary Payton Jr. back, right? So
yeah.
That's a big piece for them. And, you know, defensively, they've struggled. It's kind of been a big reason why they struggled on the road. What I've been seeing, I'm sure you saw, I believe it was a report from Brian Windhorst at ESPN, basically saying that a lot of these teams at the bottom that have championship pedigree, like the Lakers and the Warriors, kind of want the Kings. So if right now we're talking about where the Grizzlies are, who the Grizzlies are projected to play, the Warriors are at 6 and the Kings are at 3. And if that were the case, even if you don't get Warriors Grizzlies in the first round, there's also the potential that it could happen in the second round again. So I think one way or another, we're probably gonna see that matchup at some point.
Yeah, and you kind of alluded to it. The Timberwolves also would be a fun matchup because obviously there's history. You got Kyle Anderson, who's over in Minnesota now, who's with the Grizzlies last year. Obviously, the revenge factor for the Timberwolves would be there as well, too, and they've gotten better. All this could be interesting, and that's why I think if you're a Grizzlies fan, yes, you're set where you would be at the 2 or the 3, but you're looking at that bottom round to see who would you want, who could you take, who would be fun, who could be a matchup that you would want the most, because all those teams would be fun. All those teams are dangerous, too. Like, we know the Timberwolves are going to be dangerous. The Pelicans are dangerous if Zion comes back healthy. OKC, maybe they're just happy to be there, but who knows? And then, of course, the wild card in all this is the Lakers, who if they somehow find a way to get in and cause chaos, then, whew, imagine what that could be. So that's interesting for people to kind of watch the bottom of the Western Conference playoff race, see what could happen. There's a lot of intrigue there. And stay tuned, because we're not going to know until April 9th, I think. We're not going to know who gets in the play-in tournament until then. So a lot going on behind the Grizzlies. But, DeMichael, I think we said enough here today. We do have some things we need to get to for this podcast. First, just want to let everybody know that our great digital producer, Ray Padilla, who is behind the scenes here, this will be his last podcast with us. Ray will be leaving us here at the CA to take on a new job. And again, you guys don't see Ray, but Ray is the engine behind this thing. He records the podcast, he cuts them up, makes sure they sound good, make sure they're published and ready to go. Ray has done a phenomenal job. And again, you guys don't see him, but Ray is an integral part of our podcast here at the CA. So Ray, appreciate you, man. You want to say something to the people?
Just thanks for listening, and I'm gonna miss everyone at the CA.
Hey, no doubt, man. Thank you, Ray. We appreciate you. DeMichael, I think there's one more announcement that I think needs to be made.
Yes, there is. There's one more announcement.
Yeah. So it's not just Ray's last podcast. This will be my last podcast as well. I will be leaving the CA. Monday is my last day. I'll be taking a new job, which I will announce later, but I've been here for 5 years now, and it's been amazing to see kind of what's happened in Memphis since I've arrived. Obviously, I covered the Tigers football team, so I've been able to watch a team get to the Cotton Bowl. I've watched Memphis win an AAC championship. They've won some bowl games. They've had some great recruiting classes. They've had some great national attention, a sellout crowd at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. I've been able to see a lot. And then, of course, with the Grizzlies, I mean, you know, obviously I was the interim beat writer before DeMichael came, and you got to see this team kind of grow a little bit and have some fun. And now they've blossomed to be one of the best in the West. So I'm honored and thankful that I was able just to play a small role documenting that. And, you know, I'm going to miss a lot of folks at the CA. And DeMichael, I'm just going to tell you this on air, man. You are a star. You are rising in this business. You are rising as a beat writer. I can't think of anybody who I'm happy that I'm looking forward to keep reading you as I leave. But, man, you have been fantastic. And I know a lot of people listening to this podcast love your work. But I just got to tell you, man, you've done a fantastic job. And just thank you for not just taking the baton, but taking it even higher.
Man, I appreciate you, Evan. And don't sell yourself short. You know, there are a lot of things still with the Grizzlies. And of course, with your Tigers coverage, Evan has been, I'm sure a lot of the, you know, CA readers have seen, he's kind of become, you know, one of our like most versatile piece, you know, like the jack of all trades, you know, right. And, you know, your presence is going to be missed, with the Grizzlies, the Tigers, whether that's women basketball and everything else that you contributed to over the past 5 years. But, I'm definitely grateful, you know. I remember when I first got here, you definitely helped me ease into this job with the Grizzlies. And I mean, I came here and the season had already started. And you remember it was right when the team kind of took off. So there was a lot of content that needed to be produced at that time. But having you around really helped ease that process. So I'm definitely forever grateful for you for really helping me on that journey.
No problem, man. And like I said, you've been incredibly great on this beat. I've been glad to kind of help out. And we've had some great memories. Obviously, we got to enjoy the playoff run in San Francisco together. We got to cover that live. And obviously, we've had some fun covering this team and telling some great stories. Obviously, the Klay Thompson quote about Dylan Brooks, I was able to score that. And that kind of gave a little bit more fun to the budding rivalry, if you will. But ultimately, you know, again, we're reporters. We're here to do our best, tell stories, and make things happen. So as this podcast continues, you will continue to enjoy DeMichael. He's going to have great coverage, not just for the rest of the regular season, but into the playoffs, because this Grizzlies team is going to continue to make some noise. So stay tuned. Keep supporting the CA, because obviously we are trying to do our best, as every outlet is. But as for me and Ray, our careers will go elsewhere. So again, for DeMichael, and for the last time, I'm Evan. Thank you all for listening. We will be back next week with DeMichael and some maybe different voices. But thank you all for listening.
The Grizzlies Podcast is a production of The Commercial Appeal.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.